Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gods and goddesses, to the Golden Age Gurus Podcast, your source for regenerative, entrepreneurial, and eco-friendly global solutions using ancient future strategies that focus on healing ourselves, our community, and the planet. Now, it is truly an honor to introduce your host, Baba John.
This is Baba John, your friendly neighborhood podcasting man, up and at 'em. I'm in the middle of finals here in law school, but I still have found the time to interview one of my favorite mentors, Gary Liss, who I met when he was hired by Austin to design their zero waste plan. I was so inspired. I flew him out to Dallas and we trained the city of Dallas, trained the city of Fort Worth, Denton. Then I went on kind of a tour talking to cities all over the US and pretty much did that for a couple years just because I was so inspired by the impact that the strategy of zero waste has. General Motors adopted it and saved billions at all their manufacturing facilities. It's just a super powerful goal, green goal that has the economics behind it. It's based on pretty much reuse, which is way more powerful than recycling. And we're going to talk about landfill replacements and why burning the garbage is not recycling the garbage, and how to make a plan, or where to go to get the knowledge to make a plan for your community. So I'm really excited to have Gary on. He's a hero of mine, and I recorded this podcast from my car. And my audio, it was on Bluetooth and my audio is not that great, but you can hear Gary just fine. So I apologize for my bad audio on my end, but I hopefully didn't talk that much. So without further ado, I would like to introduce to you Gary Liss. But first, a word from our sponsor. Half my family is from Venezuela, so I'm passionate about Four Visions Market, which is one of my go-tos for handcrafted shamanic tools and sacred medicines, which are wild harvested in sacred prayer. You're putting profit directly into the hands of the artisans, tribes, and healers who offer their art and tools. The merchandise is even better than fair trade, and they bridge to over 15 tribes sharing their craft. 50% goes to tribes, artisans and healers, and 10% goes to the Magic Fund and other different Amazonian projects, such as their native plant and seed preservation project in the Colombian Amazon and Punta Mayo region. They have a Hape apothecary with limited edition Hape, which is an indigenous snuff made with medicinal tobacco called Mapacho and other ingredients. I currently use the Shawadawa spiritual purification in my daily practice, and I love it. Also, if you're going to get some Hape, consider a Caripe, which is a pipe for the snuff. I also use Sananga every day, which is a nerve tonic for your eyes, and warning, it stings like the Dickens, but it's good for you. Check out their instruments, art, and ceremonial grade cacao at fourvisionsmarket.com/ Omolu, O-M-O-L-U, and use the coupon code BABA, B-A-B-A, for 10% off your order. Our next sponsor is Mint Builder. Have you ever heard of the book, The Richest Man in Babylon? If not, you can check it out in the bookstore. But it's a classic business book that reveals the key to personal wealth. I'm going to give you that key, and it's basically saving 10% every month. So the way I like to save is in gold and silver with Mint Builder. I've been using Mint Builder for years and have attained master status. I've created a system where my savings plan pays for itself by signing up people who want to save and start a silver bank account, which ships physical coin out every month based on their budget. The author of The Richest Man in Babylon says that magic number is 10% of your income. Now you can build your legacy with the best pricing on metal assets while helping the nonprofit Feed My Starving Children, which uses 90% of donations for food to stop malnutrition in over 100 countries around the world. Thank you for considering Mint Builder to build your wealth and feed hungry children. You can go to mintbuilder.com/102026, or you can go to preciousmetaltrends.com/102026. Complete the form and claim your free silver bullion bar just for taking our short tour and brief survey.
Well, Gary Liss, welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Are you in California right now?
Yeah, at home in Loomis, California.
And that's where you started the journey we're going to talk about, right? California is pretty advanced with zero waste. Can you tell us how you got on the zero waste bandwagon and your story?
Well, zero waste bandwagon started back in the 1990s, and I was executive director of the California Resource Recovery Association. And we were looking at trying to push the envelope, get people to think beyond recycling, to focus on reducing wasting and to reuse products and packaging more. And this concept came over from Australia. Canberra, the capital of Australia, adopted a goal of no waste by 2010. And that morphed into the idea of zero waste. And that was back in the 1990s. The grassroots recycling network was set up in the United States, largely in response to the conservative effort to reduce environmental protection laws. And we set up a listserv called Green Yes to push back and say, we're for green and need to support that. And the Grassroots Recycling Network worked with CRRA, the California Resource Recovery Association, to help develop an agenda for the new millennium, which included the concept of zero waste for the first time back in 1997 at the Monterey CRRA conference that was revealed and adopted by the CRRA board. And ever since then, we've been promoting zero waste in California and developed through the Grassroots Recycling Network training programs for zero waste professionals ever since.
Yep, and I can vouch I have participated in some of those trainings, and they're really good. So basically what happens is the cities that adopt zero waste, they go from wasting to resource recovery, and they basically change the whole operation from wasting to resource recovery. And
exactly. And the goal, again, is we want to encourage recycling and composting. But even before that, we want people to think about why is it being wasted in the first place? Why is something being thrown away and discarded for no valuable purpose? If there's and why was it created? Why was that material created in the first place? Could we do an alternate design that didn't use products that would be wasted along the way. So it's all about redesign, refusing to be wasteful, and focusing on reuse of products and packaging before even going to the last resorts of recycling and composting.
So what cities have you worked on?
We've worked all over the country, everywhere from Los Angeles to Boston, Baltimore. We're working on a zero waste plan now for Washington, D.C. We've been involved with small communities. The first zero waste plan in the nation was developed in Del Norte County, California, the most northernmost county in California. We've worked on Austin, Texas was one of the first major cities outside of California where we worked on zero waste. And we, again, have been working on small communities, suburban areas, major cities. Now, every major city on the East Coast has adopted zero waste goals, including Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Atlanta. All those have adopted zero waste goals, and we've helped on a number of them develop zero waste plans. We've also worked on zero waste plans for businesses, zero waste plans for colleges and universities, and working on certifying zero waste facilities, working with the U.S. Green Building Council on their TRUE Zero Waste Program, which stands for Total Resource Use and Efficiency. And I'm an assessor under that program, and we work to certify facilities all over the world that have been meeting international standards developed by the Zero Waste International Alliance of what zero waste means.
Yeah, so that site is the WIA, right? TheWIA.org?
Uh-huh. ZWIA.org is the Zero Waste International Alliance. We're one of the things that we've really focused on in recent years is the hierarchy of highest and best use to guide people on what they should be thinking about when they are deciding on how to approach handling different materials that are discarded. And you want to go to the top of the hierarchy and focus on redesign, reducing, reusing first before moving on to recycling and composting.
Yeah, composting seems to be the lowest hanging fruit most of the time, since it's usually the most it's most of the waste stream, right?
Exactly. Typically, the compostables are 40 to 50% of all the materials that are discarded by a business, by communities, counties. So these days, it's really important to figure out how to do implement the composting in your area. Composting is the only place where there's actually a national goal to reduce food scraps being wasted in the country by 50% by the year 2030. There's also a new national recycling strategy just adopted last year. Next week is the one-year anniversary of the national recycling strategy adoption, and the EPA now is very well funded to help develop facilities, outreach, and education programs all over the country with funding from the bipartisan infrastructure law that was adopted last year and this year's Inflation Reduction Act.
Awesome. Well, when I met you in Austin when you were working on that plan, and I was so excited, and I recently heard that Austin ended up being that initiative ended up being pretty expensive. What do you say to that? Like, did it go right, or did it go over budget? Like what happened there? Because I've heard people in the waste industry just kind of brush it off, like, oh yeah, man, that was so expensive.
Well, I don't know all the details of the current economics in Austin, but the big winners are businesses. Every zero waste business we've worked with or documented has saved money. They save the most money by eliminating wasteful practices, by that redesign and reduce focus. They save the next most amount of money through setting up reuse systems. Toyota, for example, saved $1 billion over 10 years by coming up with reusable shipping containers instead of the corrugated containers that they used to ship parts in previously. And you can save some money at businesses and institutions if the recycling rates and garbage rates are structured right in communities. And by structuring right, I mean that the charges for wasting to go to landfill or incineration or waste energy should be higher than the cost to recycle and compost. And most communities have an ability to influence how those rates are structured. For residential services, there are new costs involved in implementing the new services like recycling and composting. For new recycling services, a lot has to do with the value of the materials collected, and over the last 5 years, the value of the materials collected had gone down dramatically when the market prices for sale of those collected materials went down due to China implementing new regulations saying that basically eliminated most of recycling from around the world going to China. And they called it the National Sword, the Green Fence, and the Blue Sky Initiative, all of which were trying to say, we don't want your crummy materials because you haven't been sorting it well, and you're sending us materials that have 30 to 40% contamination or residue that costs us to dispose of, and we don't want that anymore. What happened in China is they used those materials that came from around the world to build a circular economy in China that now gets 75% of its materials from within China. So they don't need all this material coming in from outside anymore, and they don't want to have to dispose of materials that are not recyclable. So that dramatically changed the marketplace. But within Austin, we've seen $1 billion of investment in recycling activities. The Office of Economic Development in Austin has documented those benefits. When you talk about the high costs of the program in Austin, I think it needs to be thought of in comparison to what had been happening with all those materials being landfilled and having indirect costs, indirect impacts on the environment from gas coming out of landfills and leachate coming out of landfills. That are not well regulated in most places in the country. So what may be happening is you may be no longer going to cheap landfills, and therefore some prices may be going up because of that. But the and because the market prices for the value of the materials collected for recycling decreased over the last 5 years, that may have resulted in the residential system being more costly than it had been. But it probably reflects what are the true costs of those materials being discarded, and it underscores why redesign and reducing and reusing is so important. And I know that's one of the reasons why there's a huge new movement for people to become models of zero waste lifestyle. And if you Google zero waste lifestyle or zero waste living, you'll find all sorts of examples of people who are living a zero waste life and showing the way for others to follow suit.
Yes, sir. I also recall Resource Recovery in Austin seemed to be like scaling pretty fast and hiring a lot of people. So I think that they probably just put too many resources into, you know, growing the government instead of working with the local businesses more. One of the people that had a business capitalized on the movement and started the compost company Organics. And I know Mr. Gosh did pretty well. He saw zero waste coming, set up the infrastructure for the composting, and sold the company for millions. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity in the for businesses to be on board, but the governments have to work with them and not compete with them, based on what I've seen.
Yeah, definitely. Phil Gosh came to our early planning efforts for the Zero Waste Plan in Austin back around 2005, 2006, I believe it was. And we had a meeting looking at what could be done to handle organics, compostables differently in Austin. And he attended that meeting because we had reached out to folks that were working on food issues in Austin and food access issues, and he was involved with those. He came to those meetings, heard us talk about we needed these new services for composting, and when we came back about 3 years later to do the Austin Resource Recovery Master Plan, we found he had leased a major site, hundreds of acres outside of Austin, to do the composting, had 100 different clients in downtown Austin that he was collecting their food scraps from and taking it out and composting it. And it was a great example of where the public policy discussion to develop the zero waste plan actually just through the discussion led to the private investment by Mr. Gosh. And he did, as you say, really well. There's been some other great programs in the Austin area, including Balcones Recycling Material Recovery Facility, which is now recognized as a national leader, and Texas Disposal Systems, adding lots of recycling and composting services at their landfill south of Austin.
So if a city or a business wants to go zero waste, what is the cost for a plan usually running these days?
For a city zero waste plan, they've ranged in recent years from I'd say $50,000 to a couple hundred thousand dollars, depending on the size of the city, the scope of work, how they want to approach it. We do provide a model scope of work for cities wanting to develop a zero waste plan that they can include in a request for proposals. Some communities have done that. Businesses will vary on how much how large they are, and it's the ones that have actually done plans are usually larger corporations that have adopted the zero waste goal for the company and are starting to implement it, rolling it out around the company, either nationally or globally. And in the business world, I would say that most of those efforts have been done without plans. They just start doing stuff and keep doing more with continuous improvement, and using existing budgeting and planning internal processes, but not a comprehensive plan. For places where we've done zero waste plans for businesses or colleges and universities, it's been probably on the order similar to the communities. Again, it's been more the larger scale location. So it's been more on the order of 35 to $50,000 is what a comprehensive plan has cost for some major locations.
For somebody that wants to steer the ship in that direction for their organization or their community, how would they go about doing that? And what kind of argument or could they make on behalf of zero waste?
The first thing is to go to the National Zero Waste Conference. ZWConference.org is the website. That's coming up this year, November 30th and December 1. It's all virtual. And it's organized this year by the Zero Waste USA, which is the new name for the Grassroots Recycling Network. And the first day is focused on zero waste businesses, and the second day is focused on zero waste communities. And there's a lot of information that's presented there. I helped organize Zero Waste conferences the last 2 years as well. There's a lot of information available from those past conferences as far as their slides and presentations, as well. Zero Waste USA also does more, direct training, like the training that you went through, John, which has an intro to zero waste class. But we also now have a zero waste associates training, which is the equivalent of three of our old classes. The intro class has usually been a 4 to 6 hour class. And the Zero Waste Associates training is now a series of classes. Before the pandemic, we were doing them in person. Now we're doing them virtually. And the next cohort for the Zero Waste Associates training is coming up beginning in February or March 2023. And it's usually done over about a 3 month period with several 2 hour classes virtually, and then work and homework in between the classes. The neat thing about the Zero Waste Associates training, it's good for both communities and businesses. And the outcome is developing a zero waste plan. So everyone that goes through that training has the experience of developing a plan and using some of the tools that we've now developed to help people develop zero waste plans for businesses and communities. So the Zero Waste Associates training would be getting further into the experience of actually doing it, so that by the time people get out of that class, they're feeling more comfortable to be part of a planning process in their community, in their business, or overseeing one done by others. Zero Waste USA helped develop a certification process for certifying facilities as whether they're meeting international standards. They helped to form the U.S. Zero Waste Business Council in 2012. That council ran for 6 years, actually 4 years. And in 2016, the U.S. Green Building Council acquired the assets of the U.S. Zero Waste Business Council, and then in 2017, rebranded that certification program as the True Zero Waste Rating System, TRUE standing for Total Resource Use and Efficiency. And so now they've done over 250 certifications around the world as the TRUE program. They have assessors like me that review materials submitted by businesses and institutions and communities that operate facilities that confirm that they're diverting over 90% of their material from landfills and incinerators and waste energy, and that they're focused on the hierarchy of highest and best use of reducing, reusing, recycling, and composting in that order. So the certification of facilities is another great tool that we now have for ensuring that there's not greenwashing going on and that they're doing the right stuff. By contrast, you may hear the term zero waste to landfill, and anytime you hear that phrase, you need to question, well, does that mean that it all goes to burning? And you need to ask that question. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. The True Zero Waste and the Zero Waste International Alliance of all the zero waste leaders in the world are in agreement that burning our resources is not zero waste. So you have to be really careful. If you hear the phrase zero waste to landfill, no landfill, landfill free, those are all clues that they may be burning the stuff, and that's not a good idea. And that includes pyrolysis. Burning is defined by the Zero Waste International Alliance as anything that's over 212 degrees Fahrenheit. So it may be called incineration, waste to energy, pyrolysis, gasification, solvolysis, chemical recycling, advanced recycling. There's all sorts of names for all sorts of technologies. And if they're thermal processes, Zero Waste International Alliance says they're not recycling, they're not zero waste, don't go there.
Yeah, I met a company in Mexico called PetGas that, you know, is setting up gas station pumps, you know, when the gas was really high a couple months ago. Yeah, I went to a conference in Mexico and talked to PetGas. These were really sustainable-minded, you know, people, and they were really excited about this company. And the gas was really high, and you know, it's definitely. But I remembered your teachings, and so I was not. You know, swayed, but I did note that all the young sustainability professionals were really thinking it was a good idea, and you know, I remember in Dallas when we were trying to get a resource recovery park going, because I had somebody that was turning tires into fuel the Texas Campaign for the Environment came after me a little bit.
Right.
I just didn't know. Mm-hmm. But so I hate that to happen to projects that have the right, you know, they're trying to do the right thing, and next thing you know, they have a PR problem because they're using some kind of pyrolysis technology.
Right, and there's a lot of efforts by the American Chemical Society to get legislation adopted around the country, calling chemical recycling or advanced recycling as something that that should be encouraged and provided incentives. And ISRI, the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries, and Zero Waste International Alliance both spoke at the National Recycling Congress this week, highlighting that those technologies are neither advanced nor recycling. they're different. And ISRI and Zero Waste International Alliance support chemical processing, new technologies that process plastics into other types of materials for material use in industry. And there's some real innovation going on in that field. But unfortunately, most of the chemical recycling, things that are called chemical recycling and advanced recycling, are thermal processes, burning and destroying the resources rather than reusing and recycling those back into the economy. And those are some of the reasons why some of the groups I'm involved with are now opposing chemical recycling and advanced recycling terminology. And it's more about the emissions and the health effects on people surrounding the facilities, those that work in the facilities as well. And a lot of people don't realize that there's only a few air pollution emissions that are regulated by the government. There's hundreds of emissions that come out of mixed waste being thermally processed that are not regulated. And those are the ones that are particularly noxious and can create things like dioxin and that are some of the most toxic materials ever designed by man or womankind. So it's really the health impacts for me that are most persuasive, that the thermal systems, particularly for mixed waste, is the wrong way to go. And it costs a lot of money and has actually bankrupted some cities that went down that path.
Yeah, I remember you gave me the economics. It was something like per 10,000 tons of waste that's landfilled, it creates like one job, and recycling creates, you know, a little bit more. But can you go through those numbers real quick?
I'm glad you remember that. It's for every 10,000 tons of material, landfill and burning creates one job. Composting creates four jobs for that amount of material of the compostables. Recycling creates 10 jobs, and reusables going into the reuse economy generate 75 to 250 jobs. So it's why in Zero Waste, we don't only focus on the amount of tons diverted from landfills and incinerators. We also focus on reinvesting those resources into the local economy, providing quality products at affordable prices for those most vulnerable in our society. So thrift stores, Goodwill, Salvation Army, St. Vincent de Paul, providing resources and clothing and furniture and appliances and construction products, like the restores around the country, are all examples of ones that you employ a lot of people and generate and maintain a lot of value coming out of those discarded materials and products. When we did the LA Zero Waste Plan in Los Angeles, we found that of all the materials that were still being discarded, 40% of the value of recovering those materials were from 4% of the total materials that were the reusables. So reuse is where the jobs are, is where the future is for reinvesting those resources in the local economy. And there's been a particular effort since the pandemic, particularly for reusable foodware, reusable systems for beverages, and I'm trying to really tackle getting reuse systems in place to make it more accessible and easier for people to participate in reuse systems.
Yeah, and from that conversation is basically a landfill alternative known as a resource recovery park. Can you...
Exactly. The resource recovery parks are the place that could locate all these different types of programs and businesses. Having reuse, different types of reuse businesses, having a Goodwill trailer or a reuse warehouse at one location called a resource recovery park that would co-locate with recycling operations, with composting operations. In order to build a zero waste future, we need places to process the materials, take them and make them and recover the value of what's been discarded. And the resource recovery park is recognizing what's naturally occurring all over the country and all over the world, that near landfills, on or near landfills and transfer stations, they're adding reuse functions, recycling functions, composting functions, C&D recycling, and other activities, CHARMs, Centers for Hard to Recycle Materials that deal with electronic waste and some plastics like styrofoam that are hard to collect on a route. And the resource recovery parks can locate all of those businesses in one place. The businesses and nonprofits can share resources, can share equipment, can share accountants and attorneys and get grants together. It just is like a combination of an industrial park and a shopping center, if it's done right, so that you can not only have the materials come in and be processed, but also make those materials and products available for people to reuse them, like the Last Chance Mercantile at the Monterey, California landfill. Provides a reuse warehouse essentially for all sorts of reusables to be, when people drop off their materials for recycling, they can pick up reusables to take home that are so valuable for them that they are all excited about finding them. So the resource recovery parks is a great tool for finding siting of facilities that are needed for building the zero waste future.
Yay. Well, I'm in.
All right. We'll sign you up.
So what's the latest hot news?
Latest hot news is there's money available. Billions and billions of money in America because of the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act and other ongoing federal programs. So EPA has money for pollution prevention, for brownfields development, for recycling facilities, for composting, for reuse operations. U.S. Department of Agriculture has money for composting, particularly urban composting and fertilizer alternative projects. And U.S. Department of Energy has a lot of money for battery recycling, about $6 billion for battery recycling and recycling and research and development. U.S. DOE Department of Energy is also working on plastics recycling. Because that's a derivative of those that are mining gas and oil. Many of the federal agencies have been funded through those Inflation Reduction Act and Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. And all of that started flowing earlier this year. I'm on the board as an honorary board member of the National Recycling Coalition as well. And National Recycling Coalition has worked with Zero Waste USA and the Institute for Local Self-Reliance to form the Recycling is Infrastructure 2 campaign to promote getting recycling funded as part of the infrastructure efforts last year. When that was successful, we've been promoting what money is available and when and how to apply for that. We just had a great presentation at the National Recycling Congress by Bob Gettert on all the different programs available. And we had Nina Shaw there as well, who's in charge of the Resource Conservation and Recovery Division of the US EPA in Washington. And they highlighted all the different funding that's coming available. Jay Bassett was on a session, retired from EPA, is now on the NRC board, the National Recycling Coalition board. He highlighted some other funding for environmental justice and highlighted the Justice 40 initiative that the Biden administration has committed that 40% of all the bipartisan infrastructure law funding would go to disadvantaged communities, which include urban areas, rural areas, and underserved areas. It's a new definition of a target. So it really targets some really important aspects of people that have been left out and underserved to date. Could get funding for programs through many of these bills. And the Justice 40 is saying 40% of all that money has to go to the disadvantaged communities. So this is the first time in my generation, first time in 40, 50 years that we're seeing this level of commitment and funding from the federal government. To find that information, you go to grants.gov, grants.gov, and you can put in a keyword of what you're looking for, like recycling, and it'll highlight all the different federal programs that are currently available. You could also get copies of the past webinars from the Recycling is Infrastructure 2 campaign at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance website, ilsr.org, search for Recycling is Infrastructure 2 campaign, and it has a list, the recordings of all those recent webinars. So that's new and very exciting.
Well, all right, the car cut my Bluetooth off and I got disconnected there at the end, but I'll put some links in for Gary. He says, bye and thank you. And so that recording you know, had some issues since I did it from the car's Bluetooth, but I think we made this happen. Essentially, the interview is just fine. And if you have any questions, email Gary or myself. We're both, I'm in Texas, so if you need, and I did do the associate training, and I can help you with your waste analysis, or we can get him on deck. Either way, I also put a zero waste kit in the show notes, things that I use in my house to go zero waste at a household level. Starts at home. You just start small. You don't have to go zero waste from the beginning. You start small and you work your way up, and you know, get a baseline, measure how many bags of trash are you taking out a week, and set the goal, and then start working on it. You know, you can buy things like reusable glass bottles instead of plastic bottles. The first step is just to reduce your waste. Don't buy plastic if you can help it. So I'll go to the shopping store and take my own bags, you know, things like that. So yeah, I have a zero waste kit and a bookstore here at the end. Please support the show. I've got about 2,000 downloads so far on the show, and Anchor has paid me about $16, so I'm getting paid just a couple cents per show at this juncture. If I keep on publishing, I'm sure it'll go up. And if you help support me, if you think it's worth clicking my links to support these endeavors and the knowledge that is being passed here, then please do so. That'd be great. Would really appreciate it. So hope you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your family, and I'm grateful for you and this opportunity to do advocacy for powerful strategies like zero waste. So thank you for listening, and have a good day, week, and Thanksgiving. Much love.